Have you ever wondered how sound can heal, inspire, and transform your life? What if the vibrations around you could unlock your true potential and guide you to a deeper sense of harmony? Welcome to Sound Pathways, the groundbreaking journey into the healing power of sound, creativity, and connection with your host, Dr. Karen Olson. In each episode, she explores the profound link between your mind, body, and spirit. From composers and musicians to sound healers and visionary leaders, she'll dive into captivating conversations that reveal how sound shapes your reality, heals our wounds, and helps us manifest our dreams. And guess what? You're part of the conversation. So call in and ask questions and experience personalized sound healing live. And let your sound be your guide to the life you've always dreamed of.
Hello, I'm Dr. Karen Olson, and welcome to Sound Pathways, where we explore how music, energy, and creativity can awaken healing and harmony within ourselves and the world. Today, we're exploring the power of music that can heal hearts, minds, and our planet. I am so honored and blessed to introduce to you my guest, Ricky Kej, a three-time Grammy-winning musician and producer, Billboard number one artist, global humanitarian and environmentalist. And you're going to hear all about the amazing things that he does to help all of us. I've had the joy of knowing Ricky for several years. He first joined me on a podcast I had called Sounds of Healing in 2019. And I remember it like it was yesterday, and having the joy of watching him just blast so far has been exciting and so inspiring. He just inspires millions with his music and with his cause to help the environment, to make a social impact with warmth and kindness that has never changed, even as his career has soared across the globe. Ricky, it is such a joy to welcome you.
Oh, thank you so much, Karen, and always an absolute pleasure and honor to speak with you.
Oh my gosh.
Love being on your podcast.
Oh, you're so amazing. You're so amazing. So when we first spoke, I remember your passion, and I remember your vision and your dreams. I remember how you explained in such detail about your sensitivity to the environment, and it inspired me to notice every piece of plastic I touched. And I remember what you're saying, you know, like we should even not always have to have a new outfit. Like, you're such a spokesperson to everything. So I'm wondering, was there a moment that sparked your interest in knowing that music would be your service and your purpose? And like, how did it all start? I'd love to know that.
So we had touched upon this in the last conversation that we had, but generally, you know, I've always tried to express myself through my music, because even when I was a very, very small boy, you know, growing up in America, in fact, because as you know, for the first 6 years of my life, I actually grew up in North Carolina. And then when I was 6 years old, that's when my family moved to India. But of course, I'm of Indian origin. My father is a doctor, and he was a doctor in North Carolina. And so I remember that initially I was self-taught, because we had a lot of musical instruments in our home. Nobody was a musician in my home. My father was not a musician, but probably at some point in time, he felt that he wanted to learn how to play a musical instrument. So he bought these musical instruments, but he never did play on them. So we had a piano, we had a honky tonk, we had a harmonium, which is an Indian instrument. We also had a guitar at home. And I would play on these musical instruments. And my parents now tell me that even at an initial stage, when I was like about 3 or 4 years old and I would play on these musical instruments, I was not trying to imitate another song, and I was not trying to play something that I had just heard. I was always trying to make something new, and I was trying to express myself and create something, original. So that has been pretty much my entire career, even as a band in school. In my bands in college that I played in, it was always original music that I would create, and it would be usually a song or a piece of music that I would write about something that I felt strongly about. Now, as I grew older, I felt more and more concerned about the environment, even though that has always been a concern of mine. So I grew more and more concerned about the environment, about climate change, about deforestation, about plastics pollution, about air pollution, about various things and social causes around those areas. And all of that found its way into my music and my creative process.
Oh wow. It's really amazing. Can you share with us your earliest compassion for the environment? Like in your home, what would you do if you saw a snake?
Yeah, so I lived in this in North Carolina. I lived in this really small town called Roanoke Rapids. So it's on the border with Virginia, and sort of like a lot of wooded areas around our home. There was literally a brook that that flowed on the side of our home. And I remember just I think last year I wanted to look up Roanoke Rapids, and I asked my father what was the population of Roanoke Rapids when you were there. So he told me the population was around 15,000 people. It was a small town, but now it must be much more. And then I looked up on the internet and I saw the population now is 13,000. So it's actually gone down. That's how small a town it is. And so because we had all of these wooded areas around our home and lots of trees, lots of greenery, as I said, a brook flowing right besides our home, a lot of nature, we would have a lot of animals that would walk into our home on a regular basis or sometimes slither into our home. And or fly into a home, and for me, I was always drawn towards these animals as a small child. Even though my parents would always tell me to run away from these animals or kill them immediately or spray something on them, but for me, I was always drawn towards these animals. I would see personality in every single animal, and and of course, like Indian philosophy has told us many thousands of years ago that every single animal is a very important part of our ecosystem, and it's this ecological balance, this delicate balance of the ecosystem that keeps all of us alive and serves all of us equally. And now scientists say this, that everything is about maintaining a balance when it comes to our ecosystems and when it comes to our ecology. It's not about I am superior or humans are superior or this particular animal is superior or we need more animals for meat or whatever. Everything needs to be a balance.
Wow. It's such a beautiful sensitivity that we could all increase in ourselves. It's really beautiful. So you've said that every piece of music is a reflection of you. And please share what that means.
So, I believe that music is an art form, so it needs to be treated as an art form, like how you have other art forms, like let's say painting. So, if you think of a contemporary artist like Vincent Van Gogh, if he was making a new painting, I do not imagine him going to all of the neighboring art galleries and trying to figure out what is everybody doing and what is in vogue and let me do something that is similar or what are people liking, let me do something like that so my art would sell quickly. He would dig deep into his own soul and create a piece of art that defines him as a person. And if I were to if I wanted to learn today as to what kind of a person Vincent Van Gogh was, I'm not going to read a book about him. I'm going to most probably look at all of his art and judge what kind of a person he was based on the art that he created. So I believe it's the same with music. I believe that with music too, I think music needs to be a reflection of ourselves, such that if somebody listens to our music, they know what kind of a person we are, and they know what is it that we stand for. They know what is it that we feel strongly about, or what do we want to communicate to the rest of the world, or what kind of personalities we are, whether we are a soft personality or we are a struggling personality or we are an awkward personality. I think all of that, I think, needs to come out in our music. So that's why I believe that if you listen to any of my music, since I took this journey, like you listen to my music from, let's say, 2019, when we first started, when we
Yes.
first did our podcast, I think that music defined me as to what kind of a person I was in 2019. And same thing, you listen to a piece of music from, let's say, 3 years ago in 2022, that's exactly what kind of a person I was in 2022.
Ah, it's so beautiful and the impact it has. Wow, you've performed live for and affected hundreds of thousands of people in 30 countries. I'm curious, what was your largest audience and what was it like to be on stage and communicate with them?
Yeah, so now we've touched about 40 countries now
40.
this year. Yeah, now it's about 40, and we regularly every year we do at least about 20 or 25 countries, but there's lots of overlap, because many times we end up
Wow.
going to the same countries again and again. The largest audience now, I think the largest audience was in India in this place called RK Beach. There is this huge music festival that happens in India known as the Visakha Festival. So at that festival, we performed to an audience of 88,000 people. So I
Wow.
think that would be the largest audience. I remember it was on a beach. So on my right hand was the ocean, and on my left hand was the city, and we were on the beach. And I remember getting on stage because we did the sound check, and we saw how huge the venue was, and they had put in a huge number of stacks of sound, which went all the way to the horizon. And I
Wow.
did not imagine there would be that many people. But when I showed up for the concert itself, like about maybe about 20 minutes before I had to get on stage, our cars reached the backstage, and I peeked into the audience from the backstage, and I was shocked that it was just an ocean of people, and it was quite amazing. And then in addition to that, we've done lots of other concerts. In fact, in USA, we did a concert at Central Park. That
Wow.
was for about that was for about 25 or 30,000 people,
Oh my
and that's the
gosh.
kind of size of audience that we routinely play to. Like 25 to 30,000 is a usual size, but then we also do concert halls. And but what is more interesting is the smallest audience that I perform to. So we do corporate concerts. So there was this Norwegian company that had come to India, and that is their senior management, and it was just 25 people, and they wanted a concert of mine. And of course, initially I refused, but then when I spoke with them, because they insisted that I speak with them, and I spoke with them along with my manager. And then they explained to me that they wanted a very elaborate concert with a full orchestra. So we ended up doing a concert where there were about 55 or 60 people on stage, and there were 25 people in the audience. So it
Wow.
was pretty amazing, so the stage was far bigger than the audience area. And that
Wow.
was one of our better concerts because the 25 of them did not make it feel like we were playing to a small audience. They were really good, and it made us feel like we were
Wow.
playing to a very receptive audience. So it was good fun.
Yeah, they must have really appreciated it and loved it.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. So your collaborations are amazing with these big public figures like Stuart Copeland, Kailash Satyarthi. Am I
Yes.
saying that correctly? I
That's
was so
correct.
touched to learn about him and his missions that you shared with him and the level of creativity. So collaborations and relationships and communication, it's such an important part of our lives. And thank you for your inspiration. But can you share about your process of how you choose who you're collaborating with and the artists in your project? And what does the creative process look like? Do you think of these people when you're starting your dreams? And how does it come about?
So since I travel a lot, and and I do lots of concerts in various countries, as I mentioned, the thing is that many times they happen in music festivals, and so I end up going earlier, earlier than when I'm supposed to perform, and I watch a couple of the other performances. If there is a traditional musician or even a contemporary musician who I really like, then I end up, trying to meet them backstage. Or usually all of us stay at the same hotel, so I try to, catch up with them through the organizers. When I travel to a new country, even though my band loves going to all the tourist sites and seeing all the monuments and things like that, I'm not at all into that. In fact, I'm in New York at least about 8 or 9 times a year, as you know, because for various United Nations engagements and also for my concerts. The thing is that I've not even seen the Statue of Liberty till today. So because these are things that do not interest me. But what interests me is that I switch on my phone if I've got a free day. And I look for concerts that are happening around me, and I try to go to a concert, especially if they are smaller venues, because it's the smaller venues where the more traditional musicians play. And I end up watching these experiencing these concerts and meeting people. And also, I am constantly watching videos of other musicians and other other ensembles and bands. And when I'm writing my music, then I end up writing keeping these musical instruments in mind. Like, for example, in 2015, I was making a song called New Beginnings, and there was a solo which I had written for an introduction solo for the piece. And just a few months before that, I had played a huge concert in Vietnam, and over there, there's a single stringed instrument known as the Dan Bao, and there's this amazing musician called Hai Phong, and I had seen her perform over there. And when I was writing the instrumental solo piece of New Beginnings, I wrote it keeping Haifong in mind because I knew that the danbao will do full justice to what I'm trying to convey through that music. So I got in touch with her, I recorded with her, and that went on the piece. So there are numerous such examples where I see, like, a let's say a charango player in Argentina, and I want them on the piece, or I hear a I hear a koto or a shamisen or some instrument, and then I want to work with that particular musician, or I want to work with that particular instrument, and I write my music keeping that instrument in mind.
Wow, that's beautiful. Wow, I love how you incorporate so many parts of your life into what you create, like a tapestry. And what has all this taught you about sharing unity through sound?
Absolutely. So the thing is that that's the beauty of music, that when an ensemble plays together, like, let's say just a regular Western classical orchestra. Now, with a regular Western classical orchestra, you've got all these various instruments, like, for example, you've got a violin, which is a soft instrument, you've got a tuba, which is a loud instrument, you've got a timpani, percussion instrument, a harp, stringed instrument, but very angelic in sound, and a flute, a softer instrument. And all these instruments have got their own unique identities. No instrument is trying to be another instrument. Like, a harp is not trying to be a violin. A violin is not trying to be a bassoon. A bassoon is not trying to be a timpani. Everybody's got their own, every instrument has got its own unique personality and unique identity. But yet, when every instrument plays together, they play together beautifully and harmoniously as one. Now, when it comes to any ancient philosophy, whether it's Hindu philosophy or Buddhist or Mayan or Chinese or whichever kind of ancient philosophy you look at, every ancient philosophy, without exception, speaks about this one concept of oneness. And we in modern times have misunderstood the meaning of oneness. We feel that oneness means that everybody needs to be uniform, which is not true at all. So oneness is all about everybody maintaining their own unique identity, their unique philosophy, their ideology, their political ideology, whatever it is, maintain your own unique identity, but at the same time working together beautifully as one. In a peaceful way, in a state of zero war, without completely avoiding conflict. So I think that so that is what an orchestra teaches us. But then once we go into the kind of instruments that I work with, where you have in the same piece of music you have an African choir and you have a danbao and then you have a sitar, and then you have a Western classical orchestra also in that piece, then that takes it to a whole new level where there is so much of diversity, and yet the song sounds beautiful and it sounds wholesome, and it sounds it really showcases unity and diversity, and it showcases how we need to live on this planet. We need to live on this planet not in unison, but we need to live in this planet in harmony. That's what we need to do.
That's beautiful. I totally agree with that. Wow. And it's been really fun to see all of your service and your greatness acknowledged. And it was really amazing that you were honored with the Padma Shri. It's one of India's highest civilian awards for artistic and humanitarian service. And you received that with so much humility, and to see your mother's joy and pride, it's really beautiful. What did it mean to you personally?
No, so the Padma Shri is a very, very big deal for me because it's sort of like an equivalent of the Presidential Medal of Honor, of Freedom, Presidential Medal of Freedom that is given out in the United States. So, of course, I've won 3 Grammys and I've won over 100 music awards everywhere in the world in more than 20 countries. But the thing is that these musical awards or any of the other awards are usually for a particular project that I've created. Whereas the Padma Shri was sort of like about a life in music and what I do, so it felt really good, and also to be honored by my own country, by my own president and prime minister, that was really nice. And it was nice to share that moment with my mother because I went to the president's house, that is the presidential palace in India. It's called the Rashtrapati Bhavan, the presidential palace. So that's where they give out the award, and I remember that day so clearly, because of course I took my mother with me. She was seated in the audience, and then I went. In India, we've got a tradition of touching our older people's feet. Not just any older person, but an older person who you consider to have taught you a lot and somebody who has influenced you in your life. It could be a teacher, it could be your parents, it could be a spiritual leader. So in my case, I touched the feet of our Prime Minister because he's been a huge influence on my life, and I received the award. And later on, what happens after the award is that that all the family members, they assemble in one hall, and all the winners assemble in another hall. And so our Prime Minister went to meet all the family members, and then once he meets all the family members, he came to meet the winners, and he came straight to me. He held one of my hands with both his hands, and he told me in Hindi. He tells me that in a very colloquial way, he tells me that I just over there I just met your mom, and and she to get my attention, she shouted and she said that I'm Ricky's mother, and so then I started laughing, and then he told me that this is how. I wish that every single parent in India feels about their child, and I hope that every parent feels that about their child. So that was a beautiful moment for me when he said that to
Beautiful.
me. And so that award really meant a lot to me because it is from my country and it's an honor that I received from India, the country that's given me so much.
Oh, that's beautiful. And you have such a long list. You were named GQ Man of the Year, and now you're GQ Hero 2025, and the United Nations Goodwill Ambassador, the UN Refugee High Profile Supporter, UNESCO Global Ambassador for Kindness. So, how have you been able to receive all this recognition and it influence your mission and not your ego? It's so
No,
beautiful.
I guess the reason why people feel like making me a part of the organizations by making me their ambassadors and honoring me with these awards is two reasons. One is that at least I feel that I do not have any ego because I believe that the mission is first and foremost, and that's the most important thing. And the second thing is that I've always believed that these accolades and these honors should never be taken in vanity, because that's the wrong way to look at these awards. And these awards should never be looked upon as an end goal. I think each and every honor and award should be looked upon as a platform for doing bigger and better things. Because that's how I look at it. Like if I win a Grammy or if I'm made the ambassador for the United Nations, then for me, I look at it as being a platform that now I've been given this platform. Now through this platform, a few more people will take me seriously. So what am I going to do with this platform? So I need to spread this message that I've been wanting to spread further and wider. Make these collaborations that I wanted to do, whether it's musical collaborations or humanitarian collaborations with organizations, make them far more stronger, make them filled with impact, and also spread my music as far and wide as possible. So that's how I look at every honor. So a lot of people say that, oh, I do not like awards or things like that. So I believe that one should not make art for awards. That is extremely important. So the way that I look at it is that while I'm creating the art that I'm creating, when I'm creating my music, that process is completely sacrosanct. Without keeping any kind of goal of winning any award in, it's all about satisfying my own artistic creativity. And once I'm 100% sure I've created the product exactly the way that I want it, then the creative hat comes off and the marketing hat comes on, and then it's about that. Now that I've created this piece exactly the way that I want it, and it's sacrosanct and it is uncorrupted by any kind of need for money or fame or anything like that. Now it's time for me to ensure that this is listened to or experienced by as many people as possible. And how do we do that? That is the idea.
Oh, it's just so there isn't enough time to really help people understand the quality and the videos you make. They're just so powerful. I wish everyone could see all of them.
Yeah, because
And
the videos, that's the thing about them, that I've got a friend who's a filmmaker, a person called
Oh
Sairam Sagiraju,
my
and a few
gosh.
other filmmakers, and I work with them, and I realized very early on that my medium is music and not filmmaking. So I need to work with talented filmmakers who are really good at what they do. And I also realized another thing, which is actually a lesson to a lot of creative people, that that I realized that the more I give suggestions to the filmmaker, the worse the film turns out, So
Oh,
I
that's
realized that the
funny.
best way to do it is to let the person who understands the medium the best way, and maybe explain to them as to what the mission of this particular piece of music is and what the end result I want from that particular video, and then let them do whatever they want and don't interfere in their work, you know?
Wow, well, it is amazing. So I've been thinking about how people of greatness, they started their journey long before the fame and status began, and just for all of us listening, that it's about taking those steps, and as you say, by being authentic and having your truth. How have you been able, I guess you're just so committed to that you don't have to be changed, that so that the masses see you. I mean, it just attracts the people that can understand your message, which is a lot of people.
I mean that at the end of the day, it's all about that, you know. It's all about connecting with people, trying to figure out what is it that you want to convey, and the thing is that with all the problems that we face on our planet, and there are so many problems that we face, you know, whether there are environmental problems or whether we have social problems, I've always believed that what we need right now, the need of the hour, is behavioral change, you know, because what we do is that we tend to always look at changing the world, but we don't think about changing ourselves. And that's what I've been focusing my music on right now, about encouraging everybody to be the change that they want to see in this world. Because we and how does one motivate all of us around us to be the change that they want to see in this world? How do we showcase to everybody that each and every individual is significant? So if you bring about small, tiny, incremental changes within your own lives, that is significant. It's not insignificant, because the immediate thought that we have is that if I stop using, single-use plastics, what difference will it make? Or, if I am more responsible to the environment, what difference will it make? But it does make a huge difference. So I believe that we can make 1,000 speeches, and that will probably not motivate people enough. You can showcase a ton of scientific data and analytics, which is very important, but just the scientific data and analytics will not bring about any behavioral change. So what is needed is for artists, especially us musicians, to take these complex ideas and thoughts and to simplify it through the emotional language of music, so that you're reaching people on an emotional level, and you're reaching people and you're touching their hearts and souls. And I believe that that is what will bring about meaningful change in people's lives.
Yes, definitely. It just seems like you're tireless, like you just must not sleep. I mean, you're just always traveling the globe and so committed with your hope and harmony. Are there any self-care strategies, or is it just your gifts and your passion that just keeps fueling you? It's just so much that you do, and you have so much strength. Do you have any tips for how we could maybe follow some of that?
Unfortunately, I do not lead a very healthy lifestyle. So, but I'm trying to change that now. In fact, coincidentally, it's funny that you asked that question, because just today I hired a personal trainer, so that at least when I'm in Bangalore, because I'm at home very little. I'm at home like maybe about 6 or 7 days a month, because that's the amount that I travel. So at least for that 6 or 7 days, I've decided that, that I will have a personal trainer, so that I'll get into some sort of a fitness routine. A couple of days back, I installed, I mean, right over here, I installed a treadmill, so that, while I'm working and while I'm listening to music, I can just be a little more active. And of course, now I keep saying this, but now I'm going to try to watch what I eat. But it's very difficult to do that sometimes when I'm traveling so much, because, like, for example, I'm on a plane at least about, I'm at least on a 20 flights in a month. So the thing is that on a flight, you do not have that many choices of what you can eat, you know. And also, when I'm in hotels and things like that, you end up ordering things which can be delivered very quickly to your room, and that ends up being, sandwiches and pizzas and and things like that, which can be delivered very, very quickly, but are not necessarily very healthy. So and then of course, when I'm tired, sometimes I have to drink an aerated drink so that I can get some energy if I'm feeling sleepy. So that's why. So I'm trying to reduce all of that, and I'm trying to lead a more healthier life. Yeah.
Well, let me encourage you, because you're just amazing. And I guess, like, some people live on those, there's certain people that even just live on breathing the air. It's things like that, but it is good to have sustenance supporting us, our physical body. But your joy and your humility and your presence is so amazing. And I also love your dog Hutchie and all the things you do with him and his spa
I
day.
think
And
you'll be able to see him. Yeah, that's it. Can you see it?
oh, I
There
love him.
he is,
Yeah,
licking his paw.
you must just go.
Hachi! Hachi, they want to see you.
Hello, you're
Yeah.
amazing part of the music. Yeah, I love that. I love that. So you just are all of it, the compassion, the brilliance, and your dedication. I just can't thank you enough for how you uplift the world with your beautiful music and your action and your life and your truth. So please help people know how they connect with you and all your global projects for change. It's in your social media. It's just so inspiring every day.
Oh, thank you so much. So people can connect with me on my email. It's music at rickyke.com. So music at rickyke.com, and also through my website that is rickycage.com. So that's the best way to get in touch with me. Also, I respond to messages on Instagram pretty quickly. So I think, yeah, that's the best way to get in touch with me.
It's beautiful. And even like when you have the different movements for change, for the water, for all of it, it's inspiring. And I just want to be a part of it. I know everyone does. So thank you. It's not just about your co-creation and the transformation through art, but it's just about everything. And I just so honored. And before we close, I'd love for you to introduce your Gandhi project, the video.
Sure.
It's just magnificent about unity and creativity and the strength and what it meant to, well, I guess just would love for you to introduce that.
Yeah, sure. So the song is from the Gandhi Mantras of Compassion project, a project that I did in collaboration with Kailash Satyarthi, who's a Nobel Peace Prize winner, as you know. He won the Nobel Peace Prize in 2014 for having himself in his own personal capacity rescued over 100,000 children from child slavery and child labor, and for leading one of the greatest civil rights movement in the history of our planet, with 7.4 million people marching with him across 105 countries. So he's an absolutely amazing person. So the song itself is called Be the Change, based on what Gandhi said, be the change that you want to see in this world. And the song itself features a 75-member orchestra that is the New York Youth Symphony, which is quite a unique orchestra because it's a youth orchestra. So it's got orchestral members from ages 12 to about 22. And it also features an Indian Vedic choir. But the crowning glory is the music video, where we have an artist called Vilas Nayak, who is a very celebrated and a very famous artist in India, who invented the art form of speed painting, where he creates a painting in less than 4 minutes, and the creation of the painting itself becomes entertainment. And he's been on the NBA games opening ceremony. He's been on America's Got Talent. He's been on all of these reality shows all over the world. So that's the video, and it's called "Be the Change." It features Vilas painting, making a painting in less than 4 minutes.
Wow, it's amazing. So I can't thank you enough from my heart for all that you share and the inspiration for us all to be the change. Thank you. Many
Thank you
blessings and
so
love.
much, Karen.
Thank you
Thank you.
so
Thank you.
much.
Thank
Thank
you so
you.
much.
And
Thank
we
you. All
look
my
forward
best.
to experiencing the Gandhi Project.
Thank
Blessings.
you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so very much for joining us on today's transformative journey. We're honored to have shared this space with you, and we hope you're feeling inspired and aligned with your highest self. For more insights, resources, and to continue your path of healing, be sure to visit KarenOlson.com, your gateway to deeper sound healing, music, and wisdom. Remember, Sound Pathways is here every other Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific, on BBS Radio TV, Station 1. Until next time, stay aligned, stay inspired, and let the magic of sound guide you.